This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas.
Good afternoon. It's April 10th, 2017. I'm sitting here with Nancy Drake. Nancy is a good friend of mine who I've known for over 20 years. My name is Rick Wyman. Nancy and I attended Bentwood Trail Presbyterian Church almost 20 years ago for quite a period of time. And Nancy made a decision later in life to start a second career and go back to SMU Perkins School of Theology to become a Presbyterian minister. And so Nancy's story today is to tell us about how that happened and some of the challenges and experiences along the way. So Nancy, let's just start off by starting with, you know, how you reached that decision.
Thank Rick for the invitation to share my story. I appreciate being here with you. To really get into the story, I think I need to go back a few years to make sense of it. I grew up in a family where we were Missouri Synod Lutheran, and women were not, and to my knowledge, still not ordained ministers. So this was not something that had been in my mind for a long period of time. My husband Tom and I became Presbyterians after we were married. Our children were baptized in the Presbyterian Church. When we joined the Presbyterian Church, we really felt like we had come home. And my first career out of college was in banking, a career that I loved dearly and hated to leave, but I loved the idea more of being a full-time mom and volunteer and wife. So after a five-year career in banking, I spent the next 20 years as wife, mother, and volunteer. I always knew that I wanted to go back to a career and had thought I would go back to something in business. In fact, I joked with my children saying I'm going to drive my little Mercedes convertible and wear my designer suits. But as I began pursuing those options, nothing was really resonating with me. Nothing was ringing a bell. I knew at the time I was going back to work, it was when my youngest child was getting ready to go to college, I wanted to do something that gave me a sense of fulfillment and meaning and purpose. It wasn't just about going out to make money. So when my son was a sophomore in high school, I actually began the process of networking with contacts that my husband set up for me, talking to as many people as I could, trying to see what was out there and what I would need to do. I thought perhaps I would be going back and getting an MBA. Nothing rang any bells. Everything just seemed hollow. It just wasn't creating any excitement or passion in me. To show you how desperate I was, I actually went to the library at UTD and looked at an occupational dictionary and just started going through pages to see there has to be something out there I'm missing, but what is it? As you know, I was very active in the church that we belonged to, and the pastor knew that I was going through this process, and he was wise enough to give me a long leash and let me go wandering off. But after his knowing what I was doing for several months, he asked if I could come in and meet with him. And in that meeting, he said, "Do you not realize that you have a call to ministry?" Well, it took my breath away. And again, this was not something in my history. It wasn't something that, even going through the occupational dictionaries, that I had come up with. And I was like, well, thank you, but no, I don't think that's me. And I'm one who usually shares anything and everything I've heard or talked about during the day with my husband. And I didn't even tell him when I went home. I was just like, I have to let this go. But it wouldn't let me go. And so finally I thought, well, I'll tell Tom, and he'll say, that's crazy, and then we'll let it go together. But when I told him, he said, why didn't we see that? Why hadn't we thought about that? So I was like, oh my. And I waited for a period of time, and then I spoke with each of my children, and they were very affirming as well. I must say my son did suggest that I not come to his fraternity with a clerical collar ever, but
I can understand that.
They were very affirming. So I, at that point, thought, what do I do now? I selected 5 or 6 people in the congregation at Bentwood Trail with whom I had worked in various capacities, Stephen ministry, elder, teaching, and one by one invited them to lunch and wanted to get their response. Well, each of them was very affirming. So I'm like, I guess this isn't, it's kind of the heavenly hound dog. Once the hound dog's on your trail, you don't get rid of it. It had been obviously quite a few years since I had been a student, so I thought, I need to find out if I can still do sure. the academics and if I want to do that. It's a long, you know, it's a 2.5-year process to achieve an MDiv. So I enrolled at UTD, University of Texas at Dallas, and did graduate work in business, humanities, and philosophy, trying to see what resonated with me in terms of interest and how I felt about school. Well, I loved it and did okay. I must say there was quite a learning curve. Papers are written a lot differently with different kinds of notations and all than when I was in school originally. But I just was very drawn to it and thought, okay, I need to keep going from here.
How long were you doing the UTD?
I did experience? 2 semesters.
Okay.
I did 2 semesters with 3 classes each semester.
Oh, wow. So that's a pretty good commitment there.
So, as I say, I began this discernment process when my son was a sophomore in high school, so I could do the preparation I needed. And after I decided that I did like the academics and could still do it, I began the process with the presbytery, where you meet with your session. I got the approval and backing of session, and then I went to Perkins for their discernment weekend. And at the end of that discernment weekend, I left SMU feeling like I was floating. I didn't even feel like my feet were touching ground. I'm like, this is really something I feel passionate about and called to. And then began the process with the presbytery as an inquiry, and then you become a candidate and then certified to seek a call.
Super. What in your faith journey or your background kind of made the difference in terms of this commitment and the calling? I'd be interested to, and I'm sure others would, kind of hearing about that.
Well, faith is just something that has always been a very central part of my life. My parents were involved in the church. I actually attended a parochial school for 8 years, so religious study, faith experiences were very much an integral part of all of that. As I journeyed on, one of the things that had happened to me that was very important in my faith. When I was a senior in college, 20 years old, my mother died. And that was a real test of faith and one that was a very painful experience to lose her at that age in my life sure. and someone I loved so much and was so close to. But in the midst of that pain, God's presence, God's love, God's care through the people around me, even my professors at college who just reached out and extended special care and concern. And it's really interesting. This just came to me the other day that I remembered this. I remember praying diligently and with great fervor that she would be made well and not die. And it was one of those little bargains with God where I was like, I'll do anything, just don't send me to Africa. And I laugh because one of the mission trips that I've done since I was a pastor was to Africa.
Interesting.
And I've tried to stop doing those bargainings with God.
They don't always work out, do they?
So then as an adult, I had been very involved in the church. I was a Stephen Ministry leader trainer. I had been part of the deacons at our church in Indiana. I was always part of the care teams, going out to people who were sick or the elderly. I served as an elder. The church and the ministry of the church was something I was very passionate about.
Super.
And it was actually the pastoral care, I think, through the Stephen Ministry and the care more than session and elder. It was the pastoral care that really drew me into the church, to the call. I think that's where...
And that's obviously a key component of being a pastor, calling on the people and being there when they need you. Tell us a little more about actually going through, you know, getting your master's divinity, the experiences of going back to school, so to speak.
It was awesome and frightening and all of those things all at once. We dropped our son off at A&M one day to begin his freshman year, and I started at SMU the next day. My very first class was Hebrew.
I cannot imagine.
I loved the experience, and a part of me hated to see the academic part of it end because I really loved it. But I must say, it was challenging going back to study of that intensity, Hebrew, Greek, not to mention all of the others. But I loved it. I loved the students. We had a great faculty. And I found it was a very mixed group of people. You had the students who came straight from undergraduate school, but I was not alone in being a second career person. There were a lot of second career people, but I found a lot of my study mates were some of the younger students. Everybody was just in it together. And it was a great experience.
What were some of your, other than the challenging of learning Hebrew and Greek, what were some of the other courses that you were appealed to you or any that stand out?
Well, I love the Hebrew and Greek.
Okay.
And that surprised me.
Interesting.
But I found through the Hebrew and Greek an avenue to understanding Scripture that I hadn't anticipated. Because as you begin to learn those words, the original language, and the depth of the meaning to many of them and the different ways they can be used and translated, I have to say that the Hebrew and Greek were among my favorite classes.
Great.
And loved my Bible courses. One of the most challenging parts, I mentioned that my mother died when I was in undergraduate school. My father died in my second year that I was at SMU. And that was difficult. He was in Indiana, and I was traveling back and forth to Indiana every other weekend. And really, at that point, had considered dropping out for at least a semester, and he would hear nothing of that. He, in spite of the Missouri Synod background, was very, very supportive of my going through the process. And, in fact, when I told him that I felt called to do that, he said I couldn't be prouder.
Super.
And he did not want me to quit. So I did continue, and he ended up at our house on we moved him from Indiana to Texas, and he was at our house on hospice. And the night before he died, I was working on an exegesis paper, and I was writing it on Psalm 121. I mailed that paper from the airport as I was flying out to Columbus for his funeral services and planning. And when I met with the pastor, he said, "The text that I have picked for his service is Psalm 121. And perhaps one of the greatest things I learned in my time at SMU was this was not about me and what I could do. It was totally about God and what God was willing to do through me. And that experience with my dad's death just reinforced to me that it's God who's giving me the strength to do this. It's God's call. And God will give us the power and the strength to do what we're called to
do. That's a great example of divine intervention, truly. So how many years and, you know, how many courses a year? I mean, you know.
I did a full load each semester, and it's 2.5 years.
Okay.
I finished one of the things I really enjoyed when you asked about classes I enjoyed, I didn't mention. I did my clinical pastoral education, CPE, at Baylor Dallas. And that was a full semester, full time working as a chaplain.
I see.
And I really, really enjoyed the time spent there. And in fact, considered for a period of time whether or not I might be called to full time chaplaincy. And as much as I love the hospital environment, I ultimately felt called to a church because of the longer term relationships.
Sure.
And, but I did love the CPE, but it was 2.5 years total.
Okay. Sounds
and
like.
I do have to say, it was great fun. My daughter was in college, my son was in college, and I was in college. So we could call each other at 2 a.m. during final week and talk to each other and share that experience, which if I hadn't done this, it wouldn't have been the same.
I think most people our age cannot, you know, you're rare in the sense that we can't say we experienced the college experience at the same time our kids did, but that's cool. Tell us a little bit about the calling process. You know, I think people would be interested to know kind of how that works.
It was interesting, and in my case, I knew that I needed to stay in the Metroplex.
Sure.
Because, well, I wanted to stay in the Metroplex. My husband was part owner of the company that he was with, so his relocating was not an option. So I knew I needed to stay in the Metroplex, and I don't think that this is done anymore, but the Synod of the Sun, of which our presbytery is a part, had what they called a face-to-face. And in, you know, terms of business, it was a job fair. And churches who were seeking pastors came, and pastors who were seeking a call came. And you were required to interview every slot in the schedule, which meant I was going to interview with churches that I really didn't think I had any interest in. And in fact, there were two Dallas churches that I knew were going to be having openings, and we had had some off-the-record conversations. And in my mind, I knew where I wanted to go, and it was a church in Dallas. But I had to have all of these interview slots filled, which I did. And one of the people I interviewed with, one of the churches I interviewed with, was First Presbyterian Church in Grapevine. And I have to admit, I didn't even know where Grapevine was, even though it's just on the other side of the airport. But they wanted me to come for a visit after the interview, and so for the experience, I went. Each time I talked with them, something sparked inside me, and I was just feeling more and more drawn to that church. And the senior pastor who is still there, Bob Crilly, is an amazing person. And he and I just seemed to click And I was seeking an associate pastor position. I was not seeking a senior pastor. I was only interviewing for associate pastors. And we really turned out to be a great pair because he was male, I was female, he was young, I was old, he had young children, I had grown children. His father, his grandfather had been in the ministry. I had nobody who had. I had experience in business. Our passions, his is preaching and teaching. Mine was more pastoral care, relation.
So you complemented each other very well.
So that is where I was called, and that is where I accepted a call, and that is where I served my entire ministry for 12 years.
Before we hear more about that, so how long did that calling process take?
It was several months. There are multiple examinations. Mm-hmm. There are the standardized ordination exams, which are two-day exams, and they're much like SATs. They're given certain places on certain days, certain times, and you go to a proctored situation. And I had waited until I completed my degree to begin that process. So I did the ordination exams. Then you have to fill out your PIF, which is a personal information form, comparable to a resume in the business world, and begin the process then of circulating that to churches. And then, as I say, I did the face-to-face with the synod. So it was a period of a couple of months.
I see. Did you get into other significant interviews with other churches through the process, or was it mostly after the initial job fair kind of moving more towards the grapevine?
Actually, through the face-to-face, I only accepted the continuing interviews with Grapevine.
Interesting.
I did interview with quite in depth to the point that my husband even went with me with another church in Dallas.
Cool. Okay, so you started with in Grapevine. What year was that?
That was in 1998.
All right, and you were there for
12 years.
Tell us a little bit about that. Was it and in the perspective, kind of what, not only the positives and the challenges, but looking back, is it what you expected or what was different, maybe?
To be quite honest, I'm not sure I know what I expected, and I'm not sure you can even realize everything that's going to be involved. And from the littlest things, the senior pastor, Bob Crilly, went on vacation for a month shortly after I started. And I went to serve communion. And I came from a tradition where you served the bread and the wine together. So I started, passing the trays, and one of the elders shakes his head and starts telling me, no, that's not
the way we do it.
And I had a funeral in that period of one of the members who died. What I found was, and what I said to the congregation as I was leaving, initially, I felt very pleased to know you by name. I was happy when I could go in on a Sunday and say, oh, you're Rick Wyman, and call you Rick. By the time I left, it was knowing people in my heart. And having that kind of connection with them. Mm-hmm. And being with people at joyous times of births and marriages and baptisms. But I think where you really made those deep, deep connections were in critical illnesses, accidents, deaths. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just older people dying. We had babies die.
Sure.
And stillbirths, and being able to really be with people in those moments, that is what, and that never, ever goes away.
And that's when your faith is really tested, and at the same time, is comes to play and makes it, just so meaningful.
And I think one of the affirmations of the relationship that the church and Bob and I had, when the church called a new pastor in my position, I was asked to come and be a part of her installation service and give the charge to the congregation. And I have been asked back on multiple occasions when members of the church that I had helped mentor were ordained to ministry. So that feels very good to have still had not an ongoing connection, not that I'm going back and ministering to people in times of need, but at those times of significance in the life of the church as a whole, that I have been invited to be a part of that still.
Great. Any other, experiences through that 12 years that were more meaningful, or you thought this didn't necessarily come under the job description, or, I'd be interested, and I'm sure people would be interested to hear more about that, kind of the surprises.
Well, when you talk about coming under the job description, Grapevine is a much smaller church
sure.
than Preston Hollow, so there were a lot of things that the pastors did.
There was only two, right?
When there are only two of you, that I don't think happened here, and we didn't have the extended staff
right.
that you have here. Several things that I hadn't really thought of going in, but I was invited by the presbytery to be a delegate to General Assembly. And in fact, Blair Money and I were delegates to the same assembly together. I was invited by the presbytery to be a delegate to visit India in a joint relationship that our presbytery had there. And one of the churches that I was in was a church that the British had and then given to the community when they left.
Mm-hmm.
And it was several hundred years old. I was the first woman to ever preach in that church.
Fascinating country.
And the kind of hospitality that you receive there. The church where I spent the majority of my time had some very wealthy members, but they had members who were impoverished.
Sure.
And different members had wanted me to visit in their homes, and most of the homes I had visited in were very wealthy. And one of the last homes I visited was a little tin house, not much bigger than this booth. It had an overhang where the children slept outside. They had two narrow cots with a piece of burlap in the center. And they had prepared tea for me and had a small little plate with a few cashews on it that they were serving me. And I was not able to eat the cashews because it was a fasting day in the church, and they didn't realize that I would be fasting with the church members. And when I left, they insisted, it was not an option, that I take those cashews with me. And I knew they didn't have the money to buy cashews for their family. Their children didn't have cashews, but they wanted me. And that was the kind of hospitality, people giving out of what they didn't have. And I also was able to go to Uganda and Honduras on mission trips. And to see the joy and generosity in people who had so little.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Makes you appreciate what you do have.
You hear people talk about, and even coming back from situations in war zones, but how you come back and it's almost hard to go into a Whole Foods or a Central Market because it just feels too decadent.
Yeah, yeah. So, Nancy, you were there for 12 years at First Presbyterian Church in Grapevine. It sounded like it was a wonderful experience and no second thoughts. Kind of help us understand the decision to retire and what kind of made that come about?
It was a difficult decision. Something had begun speaking to me internally that it was time to move on. It was time I was being called on to something else. And just as I had a very extended period of discernment on whether I was called to this type of ministry, it was an extended period of discernment as to whether I was being called on to something else. And I never had a clear sense of what that something else was, but I just felt it was time to move on. And I spent extended time meditating, praying. It was difficult to talk to a lot of people about it because I couldn't discuss it within the church. But again, my husband was very supportive. And I think part of it, too, I had a 54-mile commute round trip each day. And
that's significant.
I was not able to come home between meetings and office time. So when I left in the morning, I would leave at 8 or 8:30, and many nights it was 10 when I got home. Mm-hmm. And I was tired. Mm-hmm. I was not tired of the real work, what I consider the real work of ministry, the teaching, the small groups, the pastoral care, the preaching. That still I was very passionate about, but it's the evening meetings, the administration. And I just felt
it's time to move on.
And as difficult as it was, as emotional as it was, the last Sunday was just the big fruit basket of emotions because so many tears all through the church. Hard saying goodbye, and yet a sense of joy and rightness in moving on.
I'm sure it was difficult. Preston Hollow is lucky to have you and Tom.
Well, we feel very lucky to be here.
I know you mentioned to me earlier before we did the recording that you just kind of wanted to take it easy, you know, not get involved with another church immediately. But so what led you to Preston Hollow?
I did need a break. I just did not want another church meeting. I was happy to come to worship and leave worship. And we were attending here, but we were truly coming in for worship and leaving. Our son and daughter-in-law and two grandsons have been members here for 11 years.
Okay.
So we have that connection to the church. I had connection with Blair and Elizabeth, and I had been fortunate to baptize both of our grandsons here at Preston Hollow. Blair was very gracious to allow me to do that. And when you talk about the joys of ministry, not only did I get to baptize our grandsons, I was able to do the wedding vows for both our son and his wife and our daughter and her husband.
Right.
And that's just joy beyond what you can explain.
That's something most of us can't say we've done.
It is. But there's so much about Preston Hollow that we like in terms of what happens internally, the types of educational opportunities, the type of worship, but what happens outside the community in terms of the outreach right here in the Dallas area and internationally. We like the staff.
Well, like I said, we're lucky to have you. You've had an amazing journey, something that very few of us have been able to kind of take it to the next step and go back and get a degree in theology and divinity and truly put your faith, your beliefs, your Christian upbringing to work to help others. As you said, we're all missionaries and you know in our everyday lives, but I admire you greatly for that commitment, and you're just a wonderful person, and we are truly fortunate to have you, and I want to thank you for coming in and spending time and sharing your story with us.
Well, thank you. I enjoy the opportunity, and I always say in anything I've done, there's always so much gain from the other, and in ministry itself, I feel so blessed and humbled that God allowed me this opportunity and enabled me to be in people's lives and what I gained from them as well. So thanks to you.
Well, my pleasure, and bless you, and we'll look forward to continuing to see you every Sunday.
I hope.
All right. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. For more information about The Booth, visit www.phpc.org.